You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we hope Robin Williams enjoyed his really big adventure. Yes, that's a Hook reference.
Run, Hojack! Run, Hojack! Run, Hojack! Run, Hojack!
Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm bitter. I'm really bitter. I mean, I taste bitter. Last night I had a drink called the Frank Underwood, which was pure bitter. So I'm bitter.
There's a drink in DC bars called the Frank Underwood.
Yes, specifically it's in a speakeasy bar that you can't find from the street. It's got a hidden door and requires shoes, which pissed me off.
Can you then go outside into the alley and eat South Carolina barbecue?
That would be the next logical step for them, I think, if they were going to have food, but no. But this drink, the Frank Underwood, was purely and utterly bitter.
That about exhausts my House of Cards references, so I'm going to have to leave that to you from now on.
Oh, I will take it on, sir.
Also joining me via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
I'm very sad.
Well, we're bitter, we're sad, and are we not referring to Robin Williams, or are we referring to Robin Williams? Or are we just all swerving the audience this week?
Well, I am sad about Robin Williams, but... they just announced this week that the Maelstrom ride at Epcot is going to be replaced with a Frozen ride. So for those of us, you know, kind of grew up going to Epcot and remember that ride with the trolls, it's a sad day.
So the trolls have been replaced by what the general population thinks is awesome.
Yeah, pretty much.
Somewhere the internet is very, very angry over this.
They should
somewhere,
be.
Somewhere?
And when I say somewhere, I mean right here on this podcast. I'm going to say it. Frozen isn't that good, all right, people?
Man, already starting it off controversial.
Yeah, Disney's just glad they finally have a property that's popular again rather than everyone just watching Pixar, so they're going to market the crap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's depress everyone even further by talking about Robin Williams' death. It's the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Robin Williams died this week. For most people listening to this podcast, or perhaps even all people listening to this podcast, this is not news, as it's been all around the internet this week, as it should be. But the LA Times is reporting that Robin Williams will be memorialized as a character in the World of Warcraft. That's right. Robin Williams was an avid gamer, apparently, even claiming that he named his daughter Zelda Williams after the Nintendo game Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. No, just kidding. The Legend of Zelda.
What?
And he was apparently obsessed with video games, one of which was the World of Warcraft. The World of Warcraft Twitter account even tweeted on Tuesday, at Robin Williams, thank you, you gave us... so much drives, and we hope you enjoyed your time in our world. We'll see you in game.
Am I the only one who had no idea about this?
I had no clue. It just makes him even awesomer.
Does it?
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
Because look at everything that he accomplished in his life, including he was an avid bicyclist, and he was a hardcore gamer. This just goes to show that you can be a hardcore gamer and actually do things in the real world.
So this is even a callback to our Yahoo Answers question from last week about why people don't respect video gamers.
Yes, that's what I was going for, of course.
Yeah, a guy who asked that question on Yahoo Answers, get on marketing this Robin Williams gamer thing. This is the best thing that could happen to you.
This is pretty big for gamers.
Yeah, I'd read somewhere that I'd known that he named his daughter after Legend of Zelda. By the way, his daughter, Zelda Williams, a really, really great actress. Like her a lot.
They should put her and Danny DeVito's daughter in stuff together.
What's his daughter's name?
I don't know. She's just a female version of Danny DeVito, though. You'd know her if you saw her. The first time I saw her, I go, she really looks like Danny DeVito. And then I looked it up and, oh, that's Danny DeVito's daughter.
Oh, it's just Danny DeVito in a wig. He actually doesn't have a daughter. he moonlights as his own daughter.
Here's the thing about Robin Williams, though. You know, it's interesting you say on top of everything he accomplished. The thing that stood out to me this week about him after what happened is all the stories that came about it, just how he was just sort of like a normal guy. Like, this is just who he is. Did you read the Norm MacDonald story?
Yeah, that was a touching tribute. But you should give a recap for those who didn't see it.
I mean, the basic story was Norm MacDonald, when he was starting his career, was opening for Robin Williams at one point. And he had never met the guy, he had never talked to him before. And then Robin Williams came into his dressing room and basically just was Robin Williams. I mean, I'm tempted to say he was playing a character, but I don't think he was. He came into Norm MacDonald's dressing room, talked to him, acted like he was measuring his seam to fit him for a suit and everything, and then left. So he completely was just doing what Robin Williams does.
But even on top of that, Norm was on the phone, like, explaining all this to his friend, being like, Robin Williams, the greatest comedian in the world, just came into my dressing room. And then Robin took the phone and talked to the guy on the phone as if he was, like, a customer complaining about his Chinese food order.
Yeah, it's just who comes up with that stuff.
Right.
Robin Williams comes up with that stuff.
And he does it all the time. It's not just like, that's the thing. Like, a lot of these people, they have something they turn on when they're on stage and they turn it off when they're off stage. But Robin Williams, it really is. This was his life.
Yes, it was fully integrated from what we can tell, aside from some of the psychological issues, of course. But the only person we have left who's like this now is Bill Murray.
The only person?
Who does this kind of stuff, who leaves all these lasting memories with each person, is what I mean.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Bill Murray is known, for instance, to walk up to people on eating outside at restaurants and, like, take a piece off their plate and be like, no one will ever believe you, and then walk away.
Wouldn't you do that if you were Bill Murray, though?
Yeah.
Another story of this that I actually just made the connection of, nerdcore rapper Dr. Awkward posted on his Facebook page this week about a story that Robin Williams impacted his life when he was young. And I just realized it was at a video game conference. I don't know why I didn't connect this before. But he was in line, and apparently Robin Williams and Elijah Wood got in line behind him. And he asked them, and he said, well, you guys are famous, why don't you cut the line? And Robin Williams told him that my job doesn't make me any better than you. I'm just a fan of video games like you are, so I'm waiting in line.
Nice. That's a lesson the president could learn, Mr. I Cut in Line at Ryland Barbecue. Jesus Christ.
And then the other story was on Reddit, right? It was all about how some kid was at a funeral with his parents, and then they went to, for some reason I'm thinking IHOP, I don't know if it was IHOP, but they went to some restaurant afterwards, and his parents were really upset, and they saw Robin Williams sitting there, and he just came over, introduced himself, and sat with them, talked with them, and made them laugh and everything. He had no reason to, but similar to the Bill Murray thing you're talking about, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. He just left nuggets of fantastic memories everywhere he went.
Right. This is just who he was, which makes all the psychological issues very strange and very hard to understand. It's one of those times where you're like, I can sit here and I can run my mouth and I can pretend to know what I don't know, but these kind of moments are very sobering, and it makes you look back on all the other stuff when we psychologize these people. Remember how we talked about before with the killer who shot up in NorCal, and people were trying to psychologize him, and we were saying because you don't want to put people in boxes. Same thing. We've seen a lot of that this week with Robin Williams, and these kind of stories are very sobering to me because I look at them and I say, well, it's such a contradiction that I can't even begin to understand it.
Right. Absolutely.
It was our childhood. I mean, for the three of us, I mean, really, he was the genie in Aladdin, Mrs. Doubtfire, Jumanji. I mean, it blows my mind. He was such a big part of all of our childhoods.
Yeah, and we will definitely get to the Aladdin stuff later. So hold on to that, Elliot. I agree with you 1,000,000%.
In other suicide news that will continue to depress us, a teen in Des Moines committed suicide But before he did, he wanted to donate his eyes, but they were rejected because he was gay. According to federal law, someone who has had sex with another man since 1977 is deferred as a donor of blood and under any circumstance because of increased risk of having HIV or AIDS.
You know what this tells me?
What?
That gay people are going to invent time travel. Because what? All they have to do is travel back to 1976 or earlier to have sex with a man, and they're A-okay according to everyone. So if that's not impetus to invent time travel, I don't know what is.
That's true. That is pretty much pushing a certain community in one direction to invent an impossible physical feat. But yes, I think if there is one community who would invent it, it'd probably be the gays.
And it would be fabulous.
Was that Jamaican gay? Or was that the our native standard American issue gay?
I have no idea.
I'll tell you, but this is the issue, if you try, when gays try to get, do blood donation, with the blood drive, the fact that a person can be gay, even if they've not had sex, within that 5-year period or ever, they can still be turned away. That's absurd. This kid was, 16 years old?
Yes.
It's possible that maybe he hadn't had sex yet. So just right. The fact that he's gay doesn't necessarily mean that he's sexually active. There's no reason to turn away his donation.
And the policy, the policy at the time it was implemented made some sort of sense, which was in a time when AIDS was just being discovered and was sort of ravaging the gay community in many senses. But since then, and since we've been educated about it, and since the whole prediction that AIDS would destroy everyone in the country has not come true, it's time to revisit this, especially because, for instance, if a straight person has sex with someone who had a potential infection of HIV or AIDS, they are only banned from giving blood for 1 year, not their entire life.
Well, and also, what about the whole part about self-identification? So, what if a straight person at some point has sex with someone of the same gender, but they still self-identify as straight? So, they never tell someone they had sex with someone of the same gender.
Right.
Yet they're still donating.
Plus, I'm pretty sure that all of these things they're tested, right? The blood is tested, the organs are tested. It's not as if we take someone's blood and then just shove it into someone else without any intermediary. We go ahead and test these things.
Do we? Because I thought the best scientific procedure was just to ask people.
But it's
good enough for House.
They took his liver, his lungs, his kidneys, and his heart. They all of those found recipients. It was the eyes that they didn't give, and it was only because the mother couldn't confirm whether her son had had sex or not.
Well, right, just because we don't want somebody straight to get gay eyes, and then they're looking around and suddenly they think guys are attractive.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, you look at that straight guy and you're like, for a straight guy, you have really gay eyes.
You need to write that down. Dear Chris Evans.
Elliot's going to sneak into Chris Evans' dressing room now and replace his eyes with gay eyes. Going to wake him up and be like, anything different?
Does the world look brighter and more rainbowy?
Is Chris Hemsworth much more glorious to you?
That changes the plot of Avengers 2 a lot.
Age of Ultron.
Oh, speaking of stupid governmental policies, are there non-stupid governmental policies?
I was
going to
say, you repeat
policies?
Yourself.
Yeah.
Redundant.
Teens across the country are tweeting pictures of their new healthy snack vending machines, saying, thanks, Michelle, or thanks, Obama, of course, sarcastically, because who in the hell wants to eat soy crisps?
Ugh.
Asians?
I don't even think Asians like soy crisps. So students across the country are basically, I wouldn't call it revolting, but they're at least being snarky about their new healthy food options, which have rolled out this fall because of Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign and the new federal standards for calorie counting in high schools. So this is what teens do nowadays. They take to Twitter to yell at the Obamas.
That's good, though. I mean, even if they're just being snarky, the snark has finally turned. It's usually just reserved for the right. And I'm not saying the right isn't deserving of a lot of the snark, but the fact that it's been so unbalanced from teens, and we've been convinced for years that all teens are leftists, the fact that they're actually rebelling against something and being snarky against something the left is doing is awesome.
Well, it's true. Because the left is in power in so many ways, so the kids are going to rebel and they're going to go the opposite way.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but this is the first time in the Obama administration we've seen something like this, isn't it? I mean, Obama was marketed as the cool president for so many years. It's like he's finally used up that goodwill.
Yeah, but the cool president doesn't take away our Mike and Ikes. Fascist.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about this is something that Justin pointed out in pre-show, which is that it is purely and utterly about calories. So, for instance, Snickers bar bad, chocolate Pop-Tarts okay. Because chocolate Pop-Tarts are under the calorie threshold for healthy eating.
Yeah, but didn't you say that it's total number of calories throughout the day?
Well, it's total number of calories throughout the day, but also each snack has to be under a certain amount of calories.
Wait, so I can't even decide how many calories I want to eat at each time? That's even pre-decided for me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So I can't say I want to eat all 1,800 calories now at Thanksgiving dinner?
Mm. Oh, no, absolutely not. Have you seen the lunches?
It's a lot of calories? Well, fuck you.
Have you seen the lunches these kids are being given? There was a mother recently who threatened to sue her school because her son in high school is 6'3" and like 200 and some pounds. And he got a meal that was basically a roll, 3 chicken strips and a like a half apple or something, which was a total of like 200 calories.
All right. This is what I want to see happen with this. You're talking about the kid, the huge kid. Elliot just talked about football players. This is what I want to see happen. I want to see somebody try and tell the Vince Wilfork. And if you've seen his wife, you know why I'm saying this. I want someone to try and tell their kid how many calories he can eat. And I want that someone to be Michelle Obama, and I want her to walk into the Wilfork's house and try and tell them and see what happens.
Wilfork, eat.
He might mistake her for an opposing quarterback because of her shoulders. So.
That's racist or sexist or somethingist. It's an ist, definitely.
No, I'm treating her as an equal. Her shoulders are being judged in an agendered manner.
No, I only say that because recently a Fox News host made the news because during a segment talking about these standards, he actually said, why are we taking lectures from a woman who could lose a few pounds herself? And the left went fucking insane over that comment.
Oh, yeah.
But, alas, speaking of nastiness, just in tactics, not in edible goods, Uber has been accused of using dirty tricks against their rival, Lyft. Uber, of course, is a ride-sharing company, and Lyft is the same, except that their cars have pink mustaches on them. Anyway, Uber has been accused of ordering and then canceling more than 5,000 rides from Lyft drivers since last October, according to new data.
Are the pink mustaches transplants?
No, I think they come natural. When you become a Lyft driver, it just sprouts from the front of your car.
So I'm not going to get AIDS from riding in Lyft?
Well, if you ride a pink mustache, there is a greater chance of getting it.
Mustache.
Riding in a car with a pink mustache on it, I think you're okay. But maybe not in West Hollywood. I don't know. You have to see. So this is terrible, if it is true. Uber should not be engaging in these kind of practices. For anyone unfamiliar, when you order a Uber or Lyft, basically you have all the time until the car gets to you to cancel the ride, and you're not charged anything whatsoever. And so basically what this does is, one, it screws with the driver but two, it takes cars off the road so that other people can't order them as well.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I buy this story, at least not entirely. I think there's just been too much of a campaign against Uber for so long that anything negative in the press that's coming out about Uber, I'm just kind of like, is this really an issue? Or are you kind of making some of this up so that we can...
No, this is an issue.
...against Uber?
Look, this is the problem with Uber. They have no standards internal to their company. And what I mean by that is it's really easy to become a driver for Uber. And I know this because I did it for about 2 to 3 weeks. So...
Are you saying that you're a shitty person?
No, I'm saying that there was no... there was no... threshold for me to prove that I was worthy of driving for Uber. They're just like, here's the stuff, do an online module for 10 minutes, and then you can start driving. So I think this happens, but I don't think that Uber is endorsing it. I just think Uber is a name that's given to these people so that Uber can just make as much money from just flooding the market with drivers. And because of that, you're going to get moral drivers and you're going to get immoral drivers. And when you have the whole gamut, you're going to get a bunch of people doing stuff like this. I mean, Uber's entire thing when they give you the app is if you're closest when someone makes a call to the call, you get the car. You get the call, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it became literally that I was by the airport and I had to stand on the sidewalk out of my car in order to get calls because other people were standing on the sidewalk out of their car in order to get calls. So you'd stand on the sidewalk, get the call, and run back to your car to get there in time. Because these are the type of people that are doing it. Because it's just people looking for quick fixes. They're not actually looking to have a good product. They're looking to just make quick money.
Yeah. So
that's the greatness of capitalism, though. People no longer wait on rides. Rides are waiting on people.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. And perhaps the business... elements of it could be tweaked, especially for rider safety. I want to make sure that the guy driving me around in an Uber is not some serial killer who just wanted to do it that day to, you know, pick up people to murder. But so far that hasn't happened.
Right. I mean, I want to be clear that I like the concept of it. I just don't think Uber is executing it as well as they could be because they're just trying to, as I said, flood the market. Because every driver that's out there, even if a driver only makes $10 a day, Uber gets a small cut of that. And if you have 100 drivers making $5 a day, they get a small cut of all that where they're doing no work, basically.
Yeah.
All they did was invest...
Well, they created infrastructure.
Well, right. They invested the money in the infrastructure.
Yeah.
But then they want other people to do everything for them.
Well, I mean, you could equate that to a checker, you know, at a grocery store as well. They didn't invent the, you know... Point is that this particular tactic is not a tactic of Uber corporate. It's of the drivers. The drivers have been doing this. And then Uber fired back this week. This is a follow-up story. Uber fired back this week saying this is not limited to Uber. Lyft drivers, according to them, have canceled over 12,900 Uber rides in the same 10-month period.
So they're doing it to each other.
Yes. Right, and that's what you're saying, Elliot, and I agree with you on that as well.
Yeah. So this is, I think one of the commenters about this was very correct this week when he said, the thing that Uber and Lyft need to be really careful of is that they both don't end up dead in this fight. Right. Like, they need
to take... against the unions, they need to unite. They should, you know, as you know, for their own rational self-interest.
Yeah, they are not the enemy. There is enough demand for this product that they can both exist very happily. They need to be careful in being fighting the cities and the unions and the regulators.
That's right.
Right, and the way they need to do that is to vet their employees so they have good employees rather than just hiring anyone who will do it. Because all that's going to do is keep giving them this bad publicity. That's why they keep getting the bad publicity.
Yes, and I think as a function of the market, the fact when they start getting an overwhelming number of applicants versus spots, they will necessarily have to figure out a way to vet the employees. But right now they're just trying to get market share, as you said.
It's not a bad way to make money, though. My father was a town car driver. He owned his own town car business for a few years. There are long hours, and if you're like a single guy, you know, and you have the time, you know, you can make a lot of money. Doing that, but it's a lot of work. So the idea, you know, and I understand, Dustin, what you're saying about having standards and making sure that everyone can drive, you know, and that they're safe and everything like that. But at the same time, one of the really cool things is that a lot of the people who have been out of work because of this terrible economy, people who maybe didn't go to college after school, maybe didn't, they don't really have a lot of skills, but they have a driver's license and they're rather amiable. You know, this is a good way at least to help them to make some money in the meantime.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And I'm not saying people like that are bad. I'm saying that the people who aren't focused on the driving and they're focusing on sabotaging the other people, those are the people that need to be vetted.
Agreed, yeah.
If there are people who want to drive 12 hours a day and they have the energy and they have the resources, let them. That's awesome. Like Daniel said, there's a demand for this. And then, like you said, nobody will be waiting on them because they'll be there for 12 hours. But then while they're doing that, there are the other people who are sitting around canceling rides as if somehow that's going to help them.
Yeah, those guys need to be dealt with.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of ways to deal with stupidity, Los Angeles is considering giving cash money to voters. Okay, that's a little reductive of what's actually going on, but basically the city council voted 3-0 that the Rules, Elections, and Intergovernmental Relations Committee should seriously consider using financial incentives and a sort of random drawing kind of lottery to encourage people to get out to the polls and vote. That's right. We are so lazy, or maybe a mixture of lazy and disillusioned, that now the city is considering paying people to cast votes.
This sounds like an awesome idea to me.
You are daft.
Why am I daft?
Daft, I say. One, the potential for corruption in this is just incredible, for instance. Turns out that only Democrats win this prize, for instance, in Los Angeles, because somehow the Republican votes don't get added to the lottery. Which disenfranchises Republicans and gives them less of a chance, less of an incentive to vote.
There are Republicans in Los Angeles?
There are actually over 1 million registered Republicans in Los Angeles. If they actually got out and voted, the city would never be Democratic again. But the problem is they are so disillusioned that they don't vote by a huge percentage. And then the other element of this is, politicians already use monetary incentives to get people out to vote. It's called the law. We're going to take from rich people and give to other people. If you vote for me, please vote for me. They are already using monetary incentives, and it's horrifying, the results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Captain, I'm going to persuade you with my soaring rhetoric. Let's hear it.
I just want tax rebates for voting. I mean, all you're doing is giving me my money back for voting. So, yeah, if you want to give me money for voting.
That was going to be my point, like the absurdity of it, that people are going to incentivizing people to vote by giving them $25,000, $50,000 possibly. And it's all money that came from us, money that was stolen from us. I don't know. That's just absurd. And I don't know. And then you look at they raise in the article a little specter of, you know, eventually paying people to pay us to vote a certain way. And like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. We're not going to do that. Bullshit. It could very well happen. It does happen.
Well, and the other thing that's absurd about this, Elliot, beyond the whole they're giving us our money back, is voting is your sanction of the government. It's a privilege, right? This is what they fought the American Revolution for everyone to have a say in this country. And now we have to bribe people to participate?
And I think, I mean, I said lazy originally, and maybe that's fair for some people, especially young. But I mean, honestly, I think it's a lot to do with the fact that people don't see the way they vote translating into their lives getting any better. And I don't even mean individually. I mean, it doesn't matter which candidate you elect, for instance, in Los Angeles, traffic's not going to get any better. Taxes are not going to get any better. Your life in general is not going to get any better.
Well, the people you vote for is a reflection of the culture. We always forget that politics is downstream from culture.
Yes.
So, I mean, you have to change the culture first. We've talked about it on the show. I mean, you're only going to get the candidates that you want or that are going to be possible within the culture, because ultimately a politician by and large, they're empty people. They're just reflections of what they think we are looking for.
Yes. No, I completely agree, which is why I made the point about already having the monetary incentives in place.
Yeah.
So for the Republicans, for instance, who in the last mayoral election, there were three candidates in the runoff, two Democrats and a Republican, and the Republicans were so disillusioned, they just assumed they would not win whatsoever, that only like 11% of registered Republicans showed up and voted. And so the two candidates in the election were two Democrats, which gave the registered Republicans basically zero incentive to vote in the election. They don't see that it's going to get any better under any circumstance. Mm-hmm. So why would they vote?
Well, right, because this is, as we were saying, culture is a long-term thing. And no one realizes that when you're casting the vote, you're not making an immediate change for tomorrow. You're hoping to steer things in the right direction in the long term. So if people are looking for those immediate results, then they're looking for the wrong things.
And I think people are pretty much only looking for immediate results.
Right,
nowadays.
And in that sense, this is where you're right, where this whole scheme is just going to make people see voting even more immediately.
Yeah.
But isn't that the great scheme of government to begin with, where it's a long-term process, but all these people run on short-term promises?
Yep.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yep, yep.
So I think the theme of the news today was everyone should be depressed as fuck. And it's not getting any better, so deal with it.
Coincidentally, we're considering paying certain people to not listen to this podcast. So let's talk about the TV shows they shouldn't be watching either in TV with JML. To continue our Robin Williams themed episode, Disney unleashed his genie across its cable networks this week. To pay tribute to Robin Williams, they did special presentations of Aladdin this weekend on Disney Channel, Disney XD, and Disney Junior.
Aww.
Aww.
I'm just glad to know Disney still knows Aladdin exists.
Oh, they do. The Broadway show has been doing very well.
The Broadway show was the first major thing I've seen in recent culture of Aladdin. I mean, is it different at Disney World? Because when I go to Disneyland here, there's no Aladdin merchandise anywhere and barely any Aladdin stuff in the park.
Oh, no, there is. Because you have the Agrabah part of Magic Kingdom in Adventureland, and Aladdin and Jasmine are always out and about, like in Morocco at Epcot. They're always out and about signing autographs, taking pictures, and their lines are always long.
There's an Agrabah part?
Yeah, when you go to Adventureland in Magic Kingdom, there's a part that's based on the Agrabah Bazaar. And that's where Aladdin and Jasmine come out, and that's where you can find some of the more Aladdin merch. You can find it over there.
Justin, you just gave Justin his holy land. Like, I can hear him making a Mecca.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, the Mecca joke better be following that.
Yeah.
By the way, there is a Holy Land Experience theme park here in Orlando as well, but we don't.
I think in California, they are a little more leftist, and the whole Aladdin thing can be construed as offensive.
Yeah, because there's almost nothing Aladdin here, even in the Disney stores out here.
Not to shit on your point, but to shit on just a little bit. In California Adventure, they do put on the Aladdin show, I think, every day.
Oh, yeah, and I did see that, and that's the one Aladdin thing that's there, but that thing is awful.
It is pretty bad.
It's just the genie making stupid pop culture references over and over again. The genie should not reference the Kardashians. That's not what made the genie funny.
That's true.
I mean, we're talking about how talented Robin Williams is, right? What made the genie was Robin Williams, and these people at this show are just trying to imitate him, and it shows how awful.
Yeah. By the way, my girlfriend was with me when I saw the show, and she's from Pakistan. And when Aladdin came on stage, she was like, why is there an Asian playing Aladdin?
It's because there's so many Asians here.
Dude, when I went to go see it, and this was like almost 10 years ago, there's not a single white person in that cast at all. At all.
Speaking of how leftist California is, when I went to see it, there was a woman in a wheelchair in the cast.
Oh yeah. She was in it when I was there too. Absolutely.
Just driving around, and it's just like, do you ever think in Agrabah they had wheelchairs?
By the way, my girlfriend calls him Aladdin. That's how packy she is.
She sounds like she'd be on Jafar's side.
Go team Jafar. That's right.
Speaking of comedians and things you shouldn't watch, Mike Birbiglia has landed a role in Orange is the New Black. Hollywood Reporter says, the actor-comedian has joined the cast of the critically adored prison dramedy's third season in a recurring role. The part will remain shrouded in secrecy, which is keeping with showrunner Genji Kohan's philosophy on spoilers. The third season will be about faith to a certain extent. So as if the show couldn't get any worse.
A highly naturalistic, gritty show about faith. Awesome.
Totally.
It actually, I mean, I understand why they cast Mike Birbiglia, because have you seen his movie Sleepwalk With Me?
No.
I watched that recently, and it's largely naturalistic. It's about a upcoming comedian who sleepwalks and his struggles as an upcoming comedian. And there are times when it's very good because it goes into the whole, it distills down what it is to be an up-and-coming comedian, and then it goes into the sleepwalking as well. But then most of the time, it's very naturalistic. So I understand why they cast him in this role.
Great. I can't wait to continue to not watch this.
But isn't it funny how Orange is the New Black is just casting people who kind of, they don't have much of acting careers, or their careers were kind of dead, and somehow making them into stars?
Yeah, like the woman who starred in the Atlas Shrugged movie.
Yeah, and suddenly everyone thinks she's an amazing actress.
Well, she was good in The Lucky One, but I mean, I have to admit, I was paying more attention to Zac Efron.
I was going to say, you just said someone was good in a Nicholas Sparks Zac Efron movie.
She was good, but I mean, again, I was watching Zac Efron mostly.
Just to clarify, as I said this last week as well, I will not be watching Zac Efron movies.
That's more for me.
That's too bad. High School Musical is awesome, man.
Oh my god.
Jesus. It's Disney.
H. Christos.
I have a feeling you won't be watching this next thing either, Daniel. Veronica Mars. Getting a web series spinoff.
Shock and awe.
This past week, Variety reported that the cast and the date have been announced for the web spinoff. The show is going to be called Play It Again, Dick. It will premiere September 15th on the CW Seed, which is the CW's online broadcasting network, apparently. And it will star Ryan Hansen as Dick Calabasas. Ryan Hansen, most people might know from Two Broke Girls, I guess. I don't think people really know who he is. He was also a major star on Party Down, which was Rob Thomas, the creator of Veronica Mars' other show. And it will feature all of the main cast from the show and movie.
There are enough people who watch the CW that they have an online network as well.
I guess. I mean, part of me wants to hate the CW, but, I mean, at least they're trying to bring back Veronica Mars. They've got Penn and Teller Fool Us on that network now. They have a bunch of comic book shows coming up, so I can't hate the CW as much as I used to.
No, my point is that people watch it. Like, I didn't even know it existed for a long time.
Yeah, that's what the WB used to be.
The WB?
And UPN, they combined forces.
Did our podcast
just travel back in time? Elliot, are you already starting on your time travel project?
I can't divulge that. Sorry. Let's just say I have a couple of plans in the work for time travel.
No, but isn't this an example of what we were talking about last week with Arrested Development?
Let it die.
I didn't want Veronica Mars to die. I really enjoyed the show. But why are we dragging this out?
Because we're a bunch of...
Because there's a lot of crap on TV and people are sick of it. They want the stuff that they like.
But it's not what they like. It's a pale imitation of what they like.
Well,
it's a facade.
That speaks to the deprivation of what's going on.
Is this the same concept as the How I Met Your Mother people, Craig Bays and Carter Thomas, trying to make How I Met Your Father? You know, is Rob Thomas just out of ideas and going back to the same well?
Maybe he's out of ideas. I have no idea about him as a person, but I think a lot of it is all the way back to Spaceballs, when Yogurt says, and be on the lookouts for Spaceballs 2, the search for more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a lot easier to go to products that are safer, names that are safer, than to try and launch new ones.
Yes.
Names are going to make them a lot of money, which Kristen Bell apparently will not pay more in taxes on, even though she thinks the rest of us should. You thought I forgot about that.
Callback to the hating on Christopher. Kristen Bell.
No, Elliot would not hate her if she was Christopher Bell, okay?
Oh, what a bitch.
Speaking of names that go on forever and keep making money because of the name, Survivor editors are demanding a union contract, and they could go on strike, which could delay the start of the 29th season this fall.
Jesus Christ.
Unions, they ruin everything.
29?
Well, they do air 2 a year. That's why it's called season 29.
Oh. That's kind of a ripoff.
This is what I don't understand. The basic premise of the game and the show, the main strategy that everyone uses, is to safety in numbers and get together and vote out the strongest person. So why did it take the editors 29 years to figure out to get into a union?
Apparently they weren't watching the show.
Yeah.
They were editing it.
I mean, usually I'm on the editor's side. Usually the editors of Survivor are very, very good, the way the story is put together. But now I'm questioning if they're really even understanding what's going on, and it's just been blind luck for 29 seasons.
They've been throwing it into a random edit generator and creating stories.
Any idiot college kid with iMovie and with some editing software on their MacBook could easily take over for these guys if they want to ask for more money.
Right, and that's the difference, right? We're not talking about the people who are actually shaping the story. We're not talking about the producers. And we're probably not even talking about the head editors. What we're talking about is there's probably even been, Elliot, what you're saying, a cycle of kids just out of college coming through and editing this footage, editing the dailies down. Because think about the amount of footage they have with all the cameras, and they're filming 24 hours a day for 39 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of flash drives.
No, see, I'm old school. I grew up with the real world where you would live, they lived together for 6 months and then they had to edit it down to 11 hours out of 6 months. I mean, come on, that was hard. 39 days, I don't know that's that hard.
No, that's a little easier, what you're talking about. 6 months and 11 hours, because all they do is cut it down to the people getting alcohol poisoning and fucking.
Yeah, you do have a point. I concede. You have a point.
It's different stories, different stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of these things growing up, because I didn't have what people would call normal television. Our cable network provided 21 channels, 3 of which were religious, 3 of which were shopping. So I didn't have MTV. I didn't even get most of the network channels, I think. I think we got...
So you missed when MTV actually had music on it.
Yeah, I didn't even know that existed until college.
I thought MTV stood for Minority Television.
Does now.
All right, here's something else that Dan doesn't watch because he doesn't get the network.
I think we're seeing a theme here in this week's TV with JML.
Well, that was my transition, if you noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would say you should watch this next show. Variety is asking in their headline, have Game of Thrones fans already guessed the ending? And then there's a giant picture of Tyrion. I don't know if that means anything, but speculating about Game of Thrones is one of the internet's favorite pastimes, which I kind of question. Really? That's one of the internet's favorite pastimes?
I thought one of their favorite pastimes was dick jokes, racism, and hating Republicans.
Right, which, I mean, I guess that kind of is Game of Thrones with the way people's dicks get cut off and they demonize the evil people. So maybe they're right. Or demonize, and when I said evil, I meant rich. Look, they even got to me! They got to me!
You just equate evil and rich?
In my head, you know it. We are Groot. But have some zealous fans already guessed the ending? That's
yes.
What author George R.R. Martin implied during a Q&A at the Edinburgh International Book Festival on Monday night.
George R.R. Martin is what I thought you were going to say.
I just want to see J.J. Abrams and George R.R. Martin fight.
Do a fight. And then J.R.R. Tolkien comes in and kicks both their asses.
Which would be awesome because he's not alive.
I actually love the fact, I love the fact that Martin, he references the fact that he's gotten letters about having like, gay and bisexual sex scenes, specifically male sex scenes, and that most of the letters come from women.
See, that's interesting to me. I thought I had the same thought when I read that as well, because there's such a myth in our culture that they say, you know, men love watching women on women, but women don't like watching men on men.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never cared about women on women because I just have the reaction of, well, there's two people who have nothing to do with me. And they obviously have no interest in anything I have to offer them. So, do women...
I'm laughing hysterically. You sitting at your computer naked with a box of Kleenex going, well, I have nothing to offer these two.
Well, I think women... I think like, tracking like gay relationship stories rather than like actual like sex scenes, but I mean that's just a generalization. I don't know. You both have girlfriends. You talk to them. You're like, hey, when I'm not here,
when I'm not here, are you watching guys bang?
That conversation would go really well.
So my point about this story is that I think, yes, people have guessed the ending of Game of Thrones, which is that people die. There, I've guessed the ending of Game of Thrones.
The Tesseract will show up and we'll find out that Game of Thrones is in the Marvel Universe.
Also, basically with the amount of commentary on the internet about everything, it's sort of like an infinite number of monkeys typing an infinite number of words will eventually reproduce the entire works of Shakespeare by accident. That's sort of what's happened here, right? Like, people have just typed so much random shit that eventually they have guessed the end of Game of Thrones.
I mean, you would think that, but didn't we think at some point somebody had guessed the ending of Lost?
To be fair, there was a huge argument on the Adam Carolla show this week where they were talking about whether or not Lost was actually purgatory or not.
What?
And so...
Do they not want? I don't understand why people still think this.
They all agreed that it was purgatory, by the way.
That the entire show was purgatory.
No, the last season was purgatory.
Well, yeah, the Flash sideways was essentially purgatory. Is that what they're saying?
Yes, their point being when they all said, oh, this is purgatory, and the writers were like, no, it's not purgatory. We promise it's not purgatory. It's anything but purgatory. And it turned out to be purgatory.
Well, the island was in purgatory.
Right.
Nobody guessed there was a giant cork in the island that was keeping all of evil in the world in it. Because who the fuck would guess that?
Well, we did get the word cork in season 5, didn't we?
No, it was season 6.
Okay. The point, you're right. But at this point, so even then, Lost wasn't steeped in the age of internet that we are now.
Right, Lost was part of who birthed it, right? They
yes.
were the first show that really inspired this sort of fervent online chatter.
Yeah.
Right. So I think at this point, the ceaseless amount of typing by nerds has recreated the ending of every show ever.
That's probably true. And I mean, Game of Thrones is just going to be the dragons are going to come in... And then they're going to burn everyone, and then the fire is going to be put out by the ice, maybe. And then Tyrion is going to stand on top of everyone and win.
Marrying Khaleesi?
Maybe, I don't know. It's Tyrion, he doesn't need to marry anyone.
Oh.
Maybe it'll be like Blazing Saddles, and they'll actually like pan out of the set to discover that we're actually on a movie studio somewhere. You know, and then the, I don't know, it'd be cool.
It's just George R. Martin counting his piles of money. Going, I'll never write again.
That's a better ending than Lost. And certainly a better ending.
Doesn't though. End in a church.
Right. At least it ends with somebody counting his money. Although, bonus points if they have Jesus come in and flip over his table angrily.
Which, by the way, is my favorite What Would Jesus Do? Get really pissed and flip over tables.
Jesus was just a pro wrestler. You didn't know?
Oh, yes. Son of God. That's my best Macho Man, Randy Jesus.
All right. That's enough of a diversion from the difficult. Let's continue our Robin Williams eulogy with Yahoo Answers Answer. Another question. Just another answer. I won't pick it. And just another question. Just another answer. I won't pick it. First question. What was your favorite Robin Williams movie? R.I.P. Robin Williams. --, period. That's a emoticon with a tear for anyone wondering. He dies by suicide of asphyxiation. Is this a script right now? What are your thoughts about Death of Robin Williams? Okay, we already covered that. So, my favorite movie was Mrs. Doubtfire, Good Will Hunting, RV, Night of the Museum, Hook, Popeye, Good Morning Vietnam, and Aladdin. By the way, before we say our favorite movies, I love how all over the place their list is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Popeye, Good Morning Vietnam, RV. RV had JoJo in it. You know, the pop star who had the song Leave, Get Out?
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about range.
Well, Robin Williams certainly had range. So what are your favorite Robin Williams movies?
So I liked a lot of his movies, but I think the one that I go back and watch and is hysterical every single time, not just because of how funny he is, but because of he plays the straight man sometimes, is...
So not Birdcage?
Oh, fuck you, Justin. I was about to say, and that pun was totally intended because the movie is The Birdcage.
Yes. I just Humphrey Bogarted that joke.
You and you meddling kids. So yes, The Birdcage is probably my favorite overall Robin Williams movie because, talking about range, in that movie alone, the range he plays is incredible.
Elliot?
I love The Birdcage, but I think I'm split on my favorite because I like his dramatic roles more. So I think it's split between Good Will Hunting and Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I mean, of course the Dead Poets Society has that epic scene.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yes. Poetry has never sounded so good.
I'm going to have to name drop a couple movies here that haven't been mentioned, because all of these that have been mentioned are good. But I want to say a couple more fantastical ones.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I think Jumanji has to be acknowledged. I mean, maybe he wasn't, you know, he wasn't in it as much as he could be, and he wasn't that amazing in it, but just the pure imagination of that movie, the idea of a board game that comes to life as a kid, that was just so awesome. And the way it was executed, so great. And then another one that it wasn't always that funny. It was more emotional, but have either of you seen Jack?
Yes.
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. I got it now.
And that was just very, very well done. And he was very good in that. And as I said, it wasn't as funny, but you know, these premises are a little further out there. Jack was the one where he aged backwards, sort of. He aged very quickly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was sort of, what was that Brad Pitt movie? Benjamin Button Benjamin Button, right? And probably much better. I haven't seen Benjamin Button, but yeah, and it was very emotional to see someone in this grown man's body acting like a child. And he did it very well. It wasn't, you know, he didn't go full retard.
Right.
And then, of course, my favorite Robin Williams movie that we'll return to in a second is Aladdin.
We all saw that one coming.
Yeah. There are a lot of other movies that if you have not seen, dear listener, you definitely have to watch them. Awakenings, The Fisher King, The World According to Garp. They're not movies that get talked about a lot nowadays, but they are so worth your time because they are just amazing movies in their own way.
Yeah, and what about, wasn't he in what?
1 Hour Photo?
1 Hour Photo, yeah, he was creepy in that, right?
That's creepy as hell in that movie.
And wasn't he also in that movie, What Dreams May Come?
Yes.
Yes.
About the afterlife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah,
he was in a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. One of the things that's been talked about is, you know, he killed himself because of his bankruptcy and all of that, because he was having trouble in his career. At what point did his career sort of tank a little bit? Because I don't see any reason it should have.
Right.
So it's all
strange. Well, I mean, someone pointed out, you know, when you're paying two alimony checks and raising a kid and living a certain lifestyle, that is very expensive.
Right. All right. Next question. Why do I find Robin Williams, and there's a bunch of periods here for suspense, and then even more in the continued part, creepy? I always have, and I can't really find a reason as to why.
Because you have no soul, that's why.
Because you were molested by a Dr. Clown as a child?
And we didn't even mention Patch Adams.
Yeah, no one ever does. Why does he, I mean, so if you were to just sort of take stills of Robin Williams, having never heard his voice, seen him interact, or whatever, there are certain pictures of Robin Williams where you'd go, that guy might be a child molester. That we're just being fair here, fair and balanced. That's what this podcast is all about.
If
you ever...
Is this one, are we fair or balanced?
But if you ever saw him perform or in any sort of clip, even in a dramatic role where he's talking, as long as that dramatic role wasn't 1 hour photo, I don't think there's any objective measure by which you could say he was creepy at all.
Or right. Insomnia. He was really creepy in Insomnia.
Oh yeah, Insomnia. God.
Such a creepy movie.
Right. It's what you're saying though. It's snippets of him, right? If you look at any of his roles and you take a little bit of it out of the context of the rest of it, it seems kind of creepy because he goes all over the place on purpose.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of his acting is based on juxtaposition. I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this thing that contradicts it.
Yeah.
And that can seem creepy, but if you understand his technique, then you get it. But then again, isn't Hook kind of a creepy movie too?
Yeah, Hook is very, I think it's one of those movies where it's a transitional movie from childhood to adulthood. And I think that was a Spielberg movie, right?
Yeah.
I think Spielberg did that on purpose, which is that he made it sort of slightly uncomfortable for children to watch and maybe slightly childish for adults to watch. But I think that's why it works.
I lost me marbles.
And the fact that it's Glenn Close that's getting put into the boo box, I just love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the real Robin Williams movie. Next question. Is Disney's Aladdin overrated or underrated? Now, this is its explanation. No one really talks about this one, which I guess Elliot has kind of already refuted. Everybody thinks Beauty and the Beast than Lion King when they hear Disney. Aladdin did better than both Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, yet Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast get more praise.
The answer to that is marketability. Aladdin did a very, really, really, really awesome job in the theaters and made the company a lot of money. But Beauty and the Beast gives you a princess. The Little Mermaid gives you a princess. And they both... first of all, the princesses, if you have not been to a Disney park, they make a shitload of money. I mean, it is just unbelievable how much business the princesses do. And that's why it seems that way. But I promise you, you will see Princess Jasmine because she is a princess. You see her when you go to the parks. You see the merchandise. You see her and a lot of the promotional stuff. You just may not notice it right away, but she's out there. And the movie Aladdin, especially now with the Broadway show taking off in New York, you're going to see a lot more of it. And especially now that Robin Williams has passed away. I mean, I've seen, you know, at work, I've seen lots of Genie merchandise and even some Flubber stuff that's out there.
They had to pull out of the vaults.
Yeah. So it is a lot out there, but honestly, the Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast are just marketable. They're more easily marketable because the people who buy merch in the parks, it's going to be parents buying for their little girls. And they like the Beauty and the Beast because they love the dress, the gold dress. They like the Little Mermaid, but they don't necessarily, I guess, gravitate to Aladdin unless they're going for Princess Jasmine.
Right, and that's the problem I have. It's not called Princess Jasmine. It's called Aladdin. And you're going to tell me a dude with a pet monkey isn't marketable? I don't think you're trying enough. He has a pet monkey and a carpet that flies.
But they don't buy, but honestly, they don't buy. Even, there's even stuffed Abu dolls out there that, but they don't sell the way the princesses do, I'm telling you.
I mean, a stuffed Abu, and I have a stuffed Genie, and I have a stuffed Iago, and I even have a stuffed Raja.
Yeah, they're all out there. They're for sale. They are out there. But I'm telling you, in terms of what really sells in the parks,
I think his point is, and Elliot's point is well taken.
Here is just unbelievably.
I know it is. I'm just acting over the top on purpose.
Oh, I know. But for instance, the boy marketable thing that Disney has been going after is Cars, right? Cars is probably the objectively worst Pixar movie, but it's the one that sells the most toys. Because yeah. Little boys love Cars.
Well, when they get older, the Pirates also is a big selling point for boys, but a little bit older.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I agree, but here's the thing about Aladdin. They should be able to market it. I mean, what does the movie have that guys don't want? If you're looking at Disney movies as far as which ones are for guys, then, I mean, first off, it's a typical American story. We've got a poor kid who nobody takes seriously.
Typical American story set in the Middle East.
I know, it is set in the Middle East, but look at how American the story is. A poor street rat who nobody takes seriously. And he learns that it's about himself and fighting for what is important, and that's how he becomes who he wants to be and becomes rich and falls in love. It's full of magic. It's full of giant snakes. It's full of slave Leia, basically, when you have Jasmine and her slave. I mean, that had to have been influenced by Leia. They even tried...
And why...
Go ahead.
And why aren't feminists all about this movie? Because it's not about the poor princess girl marrying Prince Charming, right? It's about the poor boy marrying into the wealthy woman family and having to earn her love.
Right, and to give Jasmine more respect as a Disney princess, she's all about, I'm not a prize to be won. She even says that in the fucking movie. Excuse my language. Don't excuse my language. She says it. You're sitting here, you men are sitting here talking about my future as if I don't have a say in it. I'm not a prize to be won. She's a very strong female character.
And she kicks ass.
She is. She's very good. But she's represented in the park. I promise you she is.
But is she represented as a strong female character or as a silly princess?
As a character product, like when, you know, to buy. In terms of
I
know it sounds terrible what I said. But
do they have a game that I can go and play and then when they try to give me Jasmine, I can say she's not a prize to be won? And see if anyone gets it.
But if you want to talk, there are other really good Disney movies that are not really well represented in the parks or in a lot of the Disney channels. Off the top of my head, my favorite one, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
It's true.
That gets nothing. Esmeralda, that's a great character, but she's not a princess.
Yeah, she's a very strong female character too.
Yeah, but she's not a princess. She's not as marketable. So they don't have Esmeralda dolls and toys out there. There's no Quasimodo. Even the gargoyle characters, they don't have them out there. So
that's a good point. That one's even more forgotten than Aladdin.
A lot of films are. I mean, nobody remembers Brother Bear anymore. Nobody remembers.
People watch Brother Bear?
Even Hercules. And Hercules is a really funny movie. But you don't even really see a lot of things from there.
Well, that's what I was actually going to say. Tarzan, too. Disney tried to launch a comparable brand in the 90s, and I only know this because I was Googling Aladdin merchandise and on eBay looking for Aladdin merchandise. Don't ask. And they had a set of merchandise called Adventurers, which was supposed to be the male cognate to princesses.
Yep.
It was Aladdin and Tarzan and Hercules.
No Prince Eric? Well, that's fucked up.
What did Prince Eric do, really?
He's an adventurer.
What did he do?
Well, yeah, the ship got blown up and he wound up almost drowning. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Right, the only thing he did was he drove the ship through Ursula at the end, right?
Yeah.
How did he miss? She was fucking 80 feet wide.
The only thing he did was be a closeted homosexual. That's it.
Not so closeted if you think. Well, we won't go there. But that's essentially why it's marketability.
There was someone I was going to ask about, and now it's gone forever. Thanks, Elliot.
Marketability is interesting, though, because didn't Disney come out and say this week that, or the CEO of Disney said, they asked him if they were going to license any more third-party products, like third-party brands like Avatar, and he said, we don't have to, we own them all.
I love that answer. That's awesome. Oh, Elliot, I was going to ask you, while we're getting sidetracked by other princesses, how represented is Mulan?
Very interestingly enough, she occasionally will do meet and greets in Epcot, but you don't get a lot of merchandise on her either. But the actress, because she's on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now, she plays Agent Melinda May. So there's more promotional stuff with her, the actress, but the character Mulan, not necessarily. Although she did just appear in in one of their Disney Junior shows. I think it was Sophia the First or something like that. So Mulan came out in one of those little shows, but there's not a lot of representation of her.
Wait,
awesome movie.
The actress who played Melinda, who plays Melinda May voiced Mulan?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't, but I did know she played Chun-Li.
Oh my god, she's played all the major Asian characters in my life.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although I do have a question. When they cast Mulan for walking around the park, is she the easiest Disney princess to cast for?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
I don't know how to spell that joke out, right?
No, I know what you mean, but no, I don't think that, I don't know how easy it would be.
It's probably not very easy. I was just making a joke. All right, we ready for the final question?
Yes,
yes.
All right. Sadness versus depression. And this is, of course, relevant to Robin Williams because of the whole he supposedly killed himself because he was depressed rhetoric. So this is what the person's asking. I'm writing a paper for one of my classes on depression. So is your class on depression or the paper? Anyway. And I'm trying to clarify depression and sadness. I need to know what's the difference between sadness and depression. Is it depression for longer periods of time, whereas sadness is temporary?
I don't think that's the objective difference between the two. So I think there are two, you have to be really careful here, because I think we use depression in our culture in two separate and incredibly distinct ways. We do use depression to sort of talk about a certain quality of sadness, meaning the sort of ultimately worst form of sadness is I'm depressed. At the same time, depression is a medical clinical diagnosis. Something is wrong with the chemical nature of your brain, and it is causing you to have depressed attitude and thoughts.
Well, in the clinical condition depression, when the chemical balance is off in your brain, doesn't it do more than make you feel sad?
Yeah, it makes you not want to do anything. I mean, I this runs in my family a little bit, so I've seen it over multiple generations, and basically if someone is not being treated for it, they will sleep all day. Everything that interested them before will be completely uninteresting to them. They won't want to eat or drink or do anything. They just sort of lay there for long periods of time. And it's not as if you can just go up and be like, hey, come on, get up, let's go. Picture a 9-year-old Daniel doing this. It's very sad. Just kidding.
Man, I thought we were already sad on this podcast. This just hit a new low.
And it's not like the person can snap out of it if they're clinically depressed. It's not as if you put on their favorite show, they're going to be like, oh yay, let's watch a show. Something is wrong with their brain. So that's, I think, and then sadness, of course, just means maybe you're not attaining a value that you want to attain, or you've lost a value that you had previously, but it's not something, there's nothing wrong with you physically.
I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand when it comes to depression, because I mean, one of my best friends, she is diagnosed bipolar, and manic depression, which by the way, Robin Williams exhibited a lot of symptoms of that as well. And the truth of the matter is, you know, there really isn't a way to snap them out of it, you know, unless they can get the help that they need, unless they can get treatment. And I just want to, if I could take a moment to you know, kind of tell, say fuck you to the people who, people like Gene Simmons who really just talk shit about people who are depressed. It's not, you know, suicide is not a selfish choice. And I mean that in the literal sense of the word selfish. It's not. It is self-destructive, but it's not because of cowardice or anything of the sort. It's because they don't have, they cannot see a way out. It's a pain that they do not know how to quell, that they can't fix. And that's why some of them make the choice that they make. It's not cowardice. It's not, you know, weakness as some people like Matt Walsh seemed to say earlier this week. So I just want to put that out there. Because
fuck that's Matt Walsh, by the way. Huh? I can get behind that. I can get behind saying fuck Matt Walsh. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I love how we suddenly became fuck Gene Simmons. I didn't see that one coming.
Well, he basically said rather crudely, if you're depressed, then just go kill yourself.
Yeah, that's
awful. I guess that's one way of solving the problem.
But the way we look at mental issues in this culture, and I think we've talked about this previously on the podcast, is completely bizarre. If someone has pneumonia, you don't walk up to them and be like, get over it, you pussy. Get up off the couch. Go do some running.
Clearly you're not from Boston.
But if someone is clinically depressed and they have a literal chemical imbalance in their brain, we're like, get up, sissy, go do something, go be happy. It doesn't work that way. There is something wrong with them that has to be treated just like pneumonia.
Right, and it's more than just how we deal with psychological illnesses. It's how we deal with psychology in general.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how many people with their families growing up just had a different psychological disposition that their families didn't know how to deal with, and their solution to it was their families just told them to deal with it. They didn't try to help them or understand them or find people who were similar to them. It was just, we're this way and you have to deal with it. Which then you're unintentionally or intentionally basically repressing yourself for much of your formative years.
Right. Exactly. We have, in America especially, and probably just in Western culture in general, have an incredibly regressed view of psychology. And of psychological illness especially, but, mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is particularly. I'm not a historian of that. I just see it every day.
Yeah, and I'm not willing to, I agree with you completely, but I'm not willing to ascribe it just to Western culture. I mean, more collectivist cultures are going to be even harsher on individual psychologies, aren't they? Because there's going to be much more of an emphasis placed on conformity. So I'm not willing to concede. Basically what I'm asking is, what country would be better? What culture would be better about psychology?
And I absolutely agree with you that I just wasn't, I was actually trying to be politically correct for once, and it sort of backfired just now. But the point being that
you were kicked off a ban for 4 weeks for using performance enhancing substances.
My point being, I have no interaction with any other culture outside of American Western culture. So I can't judge. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm perfectly willing to judge. I just have no evidence.
Right, and I agree. I'm the same way. I have no reason to judge either. I have no evidence to judge either, but I also have no reason to believe it would be better anywhere else. I can't think mm-hmm. of a valid reason.
Well, I think here in our culture, in American culture, particularly when it comes to entertainment, I think we fetishize craziness and mental illness to an extent. I think we like when people get crazy. That's, you know, as a culture, we like to watch people have their breakdowns in public, you know, whether it's Britney Spears or Miley Cyrus or Anna Nicole Smith. Or I think that's part of it as well. It goes back to what we were saying before about culture needing to change before other things change, because our culture nowadays in entertainment, we love looking for Howard Beale types. We love looking for people who are just going batshit crazy, and we love to track the progression of it.
Yeah.
Well, and in a way, that to tie this back to the theme of the episode, it kind of makes Robin Williams unique, doesn't it? Because nobody wanted to see him go crazy and end like this. And the reaction to this hasn't been like the same it was to Britney Spears or Miley Cyrus. It's been very, very somber and sad. So I think that speaks to Robin Williams' abilities, his benevolence, and his worth to the world and what he brought to the world.
I think you're very right. I think there are people who sort of break out of the stereotypical molds that we hold, especially when they pass away, unfortunately. I think the other example of that in our time has been Steve Jobs, who was not eulogized as this greedy capitalist bastard billionaire, but as this immense innovator who made all of our lives better because of his genius. And I see that comparably in Robin Williams.
Right, and Steve Jobs also wasn't eulogized as some great Mother Teresa-type figure the way Bill Gates will likely be when he passes away.
Correct.
So, right, your point very well taken about Steve Jobs as well. So, Robin Williams, you were an immense talent. You will be missed just because you needed to hear that from the midside, we know. Sadness, depression, you know what else people can't tell the difference between? Daniel's email address and anyone else's that starts with a D and ends with a Richards. It's time for another edition of Not That D Richards.
When email comes to town, you know it's like a rainstorm in your browser.
So I'm blessed, really, and cursed simultaneously, blessed and cursed, to have been an early adopter of Gmail. And as a result, I have the phenomenal email address of drichards@gmail.com. But that leads from time to time, as many of the podcast listeners here have heard, a great confusion among people who are stupid. So I typically get emails for Denise Richards, Dave Richards, Dennis Richards, Dwayne Richards, DD Richards recently. And some of them are funny, so I like to share them sometimes. So in a couple of podcasts ago, we had a famous Not That D Richards where I was getting emails from Kelly, who is the secretary of the Friends of Atrium Castle Gardens. And she would continually send me emails about barbecues and community events. And every time I would respond and tell her I didn't sign up for her godforsaken email list. And every time she would say, but your name is on the list, so I'm going to go ahead and continue to send you these emails. And finally, after yelling at her via email in all capital letters like an old person, she stopped sending me emails. That is, until this week. From Kelly. Hi, all. R.E. Friends of Antrim Castle Gardens Barbecue. We're having a summer barbecue on... Wait for it. Saturday, 2 August at 12 noon at Antrim Castle Gardens in the grass/picnic table area. Please feel free to bring your family, friends, kids, and your picnic and or portable barbecue if you have one. You may want to bring a folding chairs and picnic rugs as we're hoping for nice weather. If it rains, we'll move undercover, but still, we'll still picnic/barbecue. So bring your burgers, BAPS, sausages, etc. That does say BAPS, right? I'm not misreading that.
Yeah,
what the hell is
they
a
want
BAP?
Your bibbity bobbity booze too.
The fuck is a BAP?
Well, it's British, right? I don't know.
It's
yeah, I think it's British.
Oh, this is British?
Well,
that,
look at the date, 2 August. Usually, it would be. That's
you
usually.
You didn't ever Google Antrim Castle Gardens?
No, I don't give a flying fuck, usually. It's been a busy summer, but hope to see everyone for some, quote, chill out time on Saturday for the barbecue. Where's the /picnic, bitch? P.S. We have lots of herbs in the garden that can be used on the barbecue, exclamation point. Oh, I remember now. She's the weed dealer.
Yes.
And there seems to be a good lot of cucumber to go on the side. So there, I got the British right there. A good lot.
Good lot. There you go.
See you then, Kelly with the insufferable eye. Secretary.
You should go, Dan. You should go with this invitation. Just show up.
I am so tired of getting emails from this whore. I just cannot stand it. I am perfectly fine if someone sends me an email by mistake. I always respond politely and say, basically, hi, whoever, looks like you have the wrong email address. Just wanted to let you know. Kind regards, Daniel T. Richards. And then usually my city, because usually then they can tell they've got the completely wrong person.
Oh, this is even better. This what? Is in Northern Ireland.
I can't do an Irish accent, can you?
It's right across the ooh, water from charms. Scotland.
Oh, so they don't have a summer. This is very misleading. Saturday, 2 August is not your summer. That might be the day it doesn't rain, but that doesn't mean it's summer.
Lots of herbs in the garden that can use on the barbecue. You get the good luck with cucumber to go on the side.
Good luck with cucumber.
This is what we need to do. We need to plan a trip to Antrim Castle Gardens.
Yes! Have Kelly
do
on
a live podcast with Kelly. Yeah.
Oh my god, that
I didn't know I was sending you the wrong email address. It's rather embedded.
You have an invitation.
Are you sure? Hold on, I just want to be clear. Are you sure Anne and Phelim didn't give them your email address?
My old bosses.
Yeah, you want to explain
incredibly Irish.
They're
just old employers who directed Frack Nation.
And they're originally from Ireland.
FrackNation.com. They're incredibly Irish. Incredibly Irish.
You should ask them if they know what this place is.
They probably do. They probably know Kelly. I mean, Ireland is like 16 people and 4 goats or something. Like, they all know each other.
You forgot to mention the alcohol.
Oh, right, and 95 pubs.
And potatoes.
For all 16 people. So I responded in kind, since this would be my 4th response asking her to unsubscribe me from this godforsaken list. I said, Kelly, comma, seriously? Seriously, colon. UNSUBSCRIBE. All capital letters, straight down like an acrostic.
Find out what it means to me.
Daniel T. Richards.
Acrostic phone contest.
Way to ruin my big announcement. So, in honor of Daniel's unsubscribe written in this manner, we are announcing the Midside Acrostic Poem Contest. The winner will get to come on the podcast and do a impassioned reading of their poem, and then we will interview them about their process.
Ah, nice.
Can I play? Can I play?
Yes, you can play because probably no one else will play, so we at least need one entry.
Drew.
We're going to make some up. Oh, well, yeah, Drew better enter.
Yeah, we're really counting on you for this one, Drew, to be honest. You can use it as a defense of Canadians, because apparently our Canadian audience keeps getting very surly about our Canadian jokes.
There's even a C in here. There's a C in unsubscribe.
An N for Canada. For Newfoundland. And
Newfoundland, Justin, really?
Nova Scotia.
Newfoundland, not Newfoundland.
Whatever the fuck it's called. It's Canada. Who cares? There you go. That'll give the Canadians something to talk about for this week. Maybe get us trending.
You mean talk a boot?
Yes.
Okay.
With their beady little eyes and flappy little jaws.
Not yet.
Do you don't remember the guy from Newfoundland in the South Park episode where they're trying to go see the Prime Minister of Canada?
Oh, yeah.
All the guy from Newfoundland wants is to fuck his sheep. Which the Prime Minister is outlawed.
How did we go from Ireland to Canada so easily?
So, that's it, and so until next time, I am D. Richards, just not that D. Richards.
All right, let's wrap this up. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that Robin Williams was in a phenomenal number of movies that I had completely forgotten about until this podcast, and at some point before, maybe in the winter when it gets cold here, now that I live in an area that gets snow, I'm going to wrap myself in a blanket and drink some hot cocoa and just watch all of his movies.
So you're going to go into hibernation?
Yes, that's what I basically... So did you not get that? I thought I was pretty clear.
So gay.
Wow. You know it's gay if Ellie is calling you gay.
Wow, I need to rethink my lifestyle.
All right, Elliot, what did you learn?
I learned that... depression, sadness, you know, these are things that we need to take a little more seriously. And if you know anybody that is suffering, you know, to be the cliche guy, to be that guy, definitely seek help. If just pay attention to your friends, if they might be in trouble, try to steer them towards a place they can go or someone that they can talk to that can help them.
Yeah, I want to be a little clear on that, because one of the things that really bothers me about the way we treat this is we do say, if you see someone who needs help, tell them to go get help and give them this number or go to these people. If we want to get rid of this stigma about mental health in this country, the worst thing you can do to someone who has a problem is tell them they have a problem and they have to go talk to somebody, because they're going to be like, oh, so you think I'm fucking weird. If you know someone who has a problem, just sit down and talk to them first and say, hey, I'm concerned about you. Normalize them first. Do you guys understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good point. I do like Dr. Drew gave this advice in an interview this week, which is if you identify someone, they are severely depressed, like they have been in bed a long time and they're not doing anything and maybe they've even mentioned killing themselves. He says, don't even ask them to get help. Don't tell them to get help. When they are sleeping, grab zip ties, tie their hands together, and throw them in your car and take them to a hospital.
That's true, too. Awesome. Sometimes I really, really like Dr. Drew. I followed him on Twitter for a while, and then he said some, like, can't think of the word. Oh, yeah.
Asinine?
I followed him on Twitter for a while, and then he said some collectivist stuff, so I unfollowed him. But he's generally right about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, Elliot, I agree with you. I just think when we tell people to get help and we were like, you're fucked up, go get help, I think it hurts more than it helps.
Be insensitive about it. You know, definitely you need to be a friend first. Be a friend to the person. But if you think that it's something that you can't handle, because, you know, if I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not qualified, but if there's something that's out of my reach, something that's out of reach for you, then definitely do what you need to do to get them the help that they need.
Right.
Hog tie. You're going in the trunk, depresso.
All right.
Before we sign off this week, I do want to mention that if you're enjoying the podcast, and we do thank you for listening, if you're enjoying the podcast, share it with a friend. That is, literally tell a friend about the podcast. Don't hog tie them and bring them to the podcast.
But if you do hog tie them and bring them to the podcast, please take a picture of it and tweet it at us.
We will totally give you props. Totally. Points!
We will not pay your bail if you get pulled over.
And then please, if you have a moment, either leave a 5-star review on iTunes because we're worth it, or simply share the link on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks.
All right, now can I say what I learned?
Yes.
I learned that as an Aladdin fan, I shouldn't feel as bad as I've been feeling. We actually have it a lot better than fans of, say, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And
all 16 of them.
Perhaps I should rewatch that movie after rereading the book. So thank you, Elliot, for inspiring that. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Did you say geology?
Geology.
No, I did not say that. I'm cutting that out.
I think you said geology.
I did not say geology.
Put that at the very end of the podcast, please, after like 10 seconds of silence. Did you say geology?
Greg.
Did you say geology?